radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave. On this edition of Yesteryear, we'll turn back the clock to December 25th of 1943 and a special Christmas Day edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. Before that, though, we'll enjoy some time with Bing Crosby on the Philco Radio Hour. During the 1930s and 40s, Bing Crosby was by far, arguably, one of the most popular radio, film, and recording artists. In 1935, he began as host of NBC's popular 60-minute variety show, The Kraft Music Hall. In October of 1946, Crosby moved from NBC to ABC and began hosting the popular Philco Radio Time. The Philco-sponsored show was the first major transcribed network program. Many people in the trade were apprehensive about its chances. It was a general prejudice against canned entertainment in radio. Producers and many performers felt that the public just wouldn't buy it. Crosby continued hosting Philco Radio Time until June of 1949, when Chesterfield picked him up on CBS. He continued his CBS radio program from 1949 through 1952. On today's program from December of 1946, it's Philco Radio Time, starring Bing Crosby.
Major Bose, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again, to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
This is Ken Carpenter welcoming you to Philco Radio Time, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter, his chorus and orchestra, the Charioteers, Kitch Henderson, and starring Bing Crosby. As is Bing's custom at Christmas time, he opens the program with Adeste Fidelis. And as usual, he will sing it first in Latin, and then with a studio audience joining him singing it in English.
Yes, Ken, I think it would be very fitting if our guest here would join in a chorus. Come all ye faithful.
Bing, I think it'd be nice if the home folks, the folks listening in all over the world, would join in too.
Oh, it would indeed. Gather around, folks, wherever you may be, and help us sing this eternal hymn.
Adeste Fidelis, Lady Triumphantes, Venite, Venite in Bethlehem. Natum videte, Regem Angelorum, Venite adoremus, Venite adoremus, Venite.
Everybody, in the family key. Thank you very much. A couple of teenage tunesmiths around Hollywood here, Mel Torme and Bob Wells, have penned an item which I consider quite appropriate for tonight. It's sort of a musical Christmas card. Kitchen, I'd like to do it for you. It's called The Christmas Song. a Christmas program without jingle bells would be like Christmas without mistletoe or something. We're prepared. We're not going to disappoint you because John Scott Trotter has assembled a bouncy version of this perennial favorite. Looking at my libretto here, I see there are parts for the Charioteers, the vocal group, Skitch, and oh yes, Crosby catches the cadenza or two. Matter of fact, I open the affair vocally. Roll them, John.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells and bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
That little number just fractured the vocal group in the Charioteers, threw in 8,482 jingles and never dropped a jingle. That kind of vocal work will give you a lower plate wobble, I guess. And now, here's the Philco man with a sprig or two of vocal holly.
Well, thanks, Bing. I just wanted to extend the season's greetings to our friends everywhere on behalf of Philco, its distributors and dealers. In the words of Washington Irving, this is the season for kindling the fire of hospitality and charity in the heart.
Ken, you mean we're going to give away Philco tonight?
No, Bing, we're not even going to mention them. However, from all of us here on Philco Radio Time, sincere wishes for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Oh, the halcyon days are here in radio, aren't they? Jolly Noel from us all. I guess White Christmas could stand one last delivery before the season ends.
And may all your
Charles Tazewell's Christmas play, The Small One, a story for those who like Christmas and small donkeys. The same winter sun that dances on the winter snows up north sprawls indolently at ease in the thick white dust of El Camino del Norte, Old Mexico. A passerby, weary from the heat, has paused to rest in the cool, dripping shade of a pepper tree and has dropped off to sleep. He's suddenly awakened by the shrill voice of Pablo, aged 10, who stands with bare brown legs wide apart in the center of the road and bitterly addresses a small, discouraged, disreputable donkey.
A donkey? A donkey you call yourself? You're a disgrace to all the donkeys of Mexico, of all the world, of all...
Pablo.
Hmm? Oh, buenos dias. I did not know that...
What's all the commotion here, young man? What has the poor beast done that you should be so angry?
But nothing.
Well, then why are you...
Then that is all he wants to do ever. Here it is, but 2 days until Christmas, and a load of wood could be sold in the village to buy gifts and a candle. But does that matter to this one? No, he cares for nothing, but nothing.
Well, a donkey's a donkey, Pablo. They're all the same.
But why? Why of all beasts should a donkey be so stubborn?
Stubborn? Oh, no, Pablo. That's wrong.
But he's always...
I know. Everyone says they are. They curse them and they belabor their backs with sticks and they call them stupid, but that's because they don't know the truth about little donkeys.
The truth?
Yes. Really not stubbornness, but pride that makes small donkeys so, well, so aloof. No wind, sun, rain, pain, or adversity can touch them. You see, their pride is a shield against all the discomforts man or the elements can offer.
But what has a donkey to be proud of?
Oh, great deal, Pablo. Bring your small beast over here in the shade. I'll explain.
Come along, Jupiter.
Listen. Listen, Pablo, do you hear that? Only a small donkey can make that sound with his hoofs as he walks on the stones of the road. No other beast can do it. Sit down. Sit down, my son.
Si, senor.
Now, as I was saying... People are all wrong about small donkeys. A very long time ago, a great honor came to one of them, an honor so great that it lifted him and all his descendants to an exalted place. A place that you or I or all the world might envy. Ever since that time, every small donkey has been content to stand and drowse in the sun or the shade. For he alone of all animals, of all men, has already fulfilled his destiny.
His destiny,
Senor? Yes. You see, once upon a time, there was a small donkey. He was 14 unhappy years old, and he had worked hard and long for at least twice 14 masters. He was battered and scarred, and he presented a most distressful appearance. His tail was naught but a piece of limp rope unraveled down at the end. One of his ears stood straight up like a cactus plant, while the other hung drooping like a wilted cabbage leaf. His off hind leg had a decided stiffness.
What was his name?
They called him the Small One. His latest master was a woodcutter who also owned four younger, and therefore stronger donkeys. But Small One was the special charge of the woodcutter's son. It was the boy who saw to it that Small One always had dry straw for his bed, and that the load of wood to be carried to the town was not too heavy for Small One's aging back. One day the woodcutter called his son to him.
Son?
Yes, father.
I have a task for you to do in the town, son.
A load of wood?
No. I wish you to take this donkey, the one you call the Small One, to a shop just inside the town gate. I have already spoken to the owner. He will give you a piece of silver in exchange for the beast.
You mean... Oh, you don't mean you're going to sell Small One?
He can no longer do his share of the work. Even when carrying half the load the other donkeys carry, his worn-out legs tremble and his sides work like a bellows.
But he'll be strong as the others soon. Will you wait and see? Give him a few weeks.
Enough. An old donkey is of little use. One day he might drop dead on us up in the hills, a total loss. Better to take a piece of silver and say good riddance to the beast. You will start at once. You hear?
Yes.
Yes, Father.
The shop you will take him to is the second one on the left as you pass through the gate in town.
The second? But that's the tanner's.
And what of that? The small one's hide is old, but it will make good leather.
But he's been faithful. He's worked hard. He's done his best. And you can't sell him to the tanners to be killed.
Come now. I'll have no tears. No crying over a miserable donkey. Hurry, be off with you. And take good care not to lose that piece of silver on the way home.
So, Pablo, the small boy and the small donkey began their sorrowful journey into town. The boy was heartbroken. He cried for a while. And then he tried desperately to think of some way to save his friend. The sound of the small one's hoofs on the road seemed to say over and over again, going to the tanner, going to the tanner. Suddenly it came to the boy's mind that there was a horse market in the town. If he could sell small one to some new and kind master, the little donkey would still live, and yet the father would also have his piece of silver. Well, it was early afternoon when the boy and the small one passed through the town gate and down the narrow, twisted street to the marketplace.
And what about this fine animal, I said? The mare whose sire was so famous that not the prince ever set his back. Swung a limb, round the wind. Who starts the bid at 50?
50!
50 it is. We'll make it 51. Come, my friends. Are you going to let such an animal go for so paltry a sum?
Oh, please, sir. Would you like to buy a fine donkey?
What? What'd you say, boy?
It's a small donkey. He's for sale. I'm strong and willing. The price is very cheap. But what piece?
No, I don't want to buy a donkey. Be off with you.
60 is the bid. That's more like it. Do I hear 62? Will someone say 62? Come, my friend. You'll never again get such a fine horse for so little cash. Look at the proud head. See the flowing mane.
Excuse me, please. This small donkey's for sale. Would you
what
like
What is
to...
it you want for it?
This fine animal, he can be bought for only one piece of silver. Isn't that a great saving? They're bidding 60 for the horse, and I know he can't do half the work a small one. Look, he's very...
Go gentle. Away. Don't bother me.
Oh, but he's...
Go away, or I'll take a stick to both your backs. And now, my friend, I...
Is he free is the bid. Do I hear more? 83 once, 83 twice, sold for 83 pieces of silver.
You've made a fine bargain, my friend. Now, who has the next animal for sale? Step up.
Please, sir, would you try to sell this small donkey?
Go away, boy.
Oh, but he's a very valuable animal. He's not nearly as old as he looks. It's just because he's worked so hard. And you're the one that doesn't stand up straight as a donkey should. Well, that was the fault of a careless master, not his own. He eats very little, and he's terribly strong.
This is a horse market, boy. We've no time to waste on donkeys.
But a small donkey would take such a small time.
All right, my boy, if you insist. My friend, a great bargain I have to offer you. The proud owner terms it a donkey, but it appears to me to be an animated pile of shaking bones.
No, it's not.
You can see how the morphs have been at the hive. And the tail, is it a tail? Or is it the stub of a broom? Worn out from sweeping the courtyard. A true museum piece, my friend. Moldy with age and loose in the joints.
He is not.
Ah, but it is not seemly to laugh, my friend, because the owner assures me that this animal is fine enough to share a stall with the king's horses.
Stop! He can't make fun of him. Maybe he's not as handsome as your animals, but he's better. He's a lot better. Small one deserves to be in a king's stable.
All right, boy. Take your donkey and move along. We've got business to attend to. Hurry up. Off with you. Now that we've had our fun and disposed of the king's donkey.
Oh, the boy and the little beast left the marketplace, Pablo. The hours were slipping swiftly by, and the boy knew he must start soon for home. That he must have the piece of silver to give to his father. He tried stopping people on the street. He inquired from door to door, but no one wanted to buy a small, tired donkey. The sun was sinking fast when he came at last back to the town gates, and he stood before the tanner's door. The boy's face was tear-streaked. The small one's head drooped so low that his limp ear almost touched the ground. The boy said goodbye to his small friend, asked forgiveness for what he had to do, and there was understanding in the little donkey's eyes. Then, just as the boy was lifting the latch of the tanner's door, a voice spoke to him.
My friend.
Yes, sir.
I have a great favor to ask. Are you the owner of that small donkey?
Oh, yes, sir.
I have a long journey to make. My wife is not well. I have great need of a strong, gentle animal to carry her safely.
Small one's very strong and very trustworthy.
Yes, I can see. Would you sell him to me?
Yes, oh, yes, sir. But for one piece of silver.
One piece of silver?
Is that too much, sir?
Too much? Oh, no. Very reasonable price for such a beautiful animal.
He's not very beautiful, but he's good.
Yes, I can see that. I'll be kind to him. I promise you that.
Well, then he'll work so hard to please you.
Here's your piece of silver. Come, small one.
Do you mind if I come as far as the town gate? You see, the small one
not
and I...
Not at all. You'll want to say goodbye to him, of course. You can do that while I see my wife safely on his back. Here we are. Easy, small one.
Goodbye, small one. You must be very faithful. And it isn't forever, you know. When I grow up and earn many pieces of silver, I'll buy you back. And you'll have a fine stable and nothing to do at all but sleep and eat. Won't that be nice, small one?
All right, my son. You're ready to go.
Wait, traveler.
Yes, soldier?
I must make out the record before you can pass through the town gate. Who are you?
My name is Joseph.
And your wife?
They call her Mary.
Your destination?
Bethlehem.
Pass.
Come, small one.
Goodbye, son.
Goodbye. Goodbye, small one. Be gentle and sure of foot. And carry her safe to Bethlehem.
So Pablo, the small one, traveled the many weary miles to Bethlehem. There in a stable which became a king's stable, he saw a king born. A king of men, of centuries, of life, of death. Yes, the small one's tired old eyes saw the shepherds and the wise men who came to pay homage to his small master. And he heard the voices of angels rejoicing, singing the very same notes his hoofs had rung out on the stones of the road. And then it came to pass that all those who had laughed at his ragged coat, his limping gait, and his drooping ear, they all envied the small one, for he was part of a great miracle. It was a long, long time ago, Pablo, my son. But today all small donkeys stand and they dream, especially at Christmas time. They dream of the small one, the small one of Bethlehem.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin, mother and child, holy infant, so tender and mild, sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace.
Holy night, holy night.
transcribed in Hollywood.
From December of 1946, there's Bing Crosby with the Philco Radio Hour. In a moment, we'll look back 2 years earlier to Christmas Day of 1943 and a special edition of Fibber McGee and Molly. That as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
And welcome back to our Christmas edition of Yesteryear. Up next, it's Fibber McGee and Molly. Fibber McGee and Molly was developed from an earlier daytime show, Smackout, which ran on a Chicago station from 1931 through 1935 and on the Blue Network from 1931 through 1933. The story of Jim and Marion Jordan was one of childhood sweethearts from the Peoria Sticks, making it big in Hollywood against the slickest competition of the time. Jim Jordan was a farm boy born near Peoria in 1896. He was part of a church choir when he met Marion Driscoll, a coal miner's daughter who wanted to be a music teacher. In the late 1920s, Jim and Marion Jordan signed on with radio station WENR in Chicago, where they were heard 3 times a week as the Air Scouts. The show ran for 4 years in Chicago before an advertising agency executive handling the Johnson Wax account heard their program and bought it for his client in the spring of 1935. The program continued as a weekly half-hour show until June of 1953, when it then moved to a 5-day-a-week 15-minute show, which continued until 1957. On today's program, it's the Christmas Day edition of Fibber McGee and Molly from December of 1943, here on Yesteryear.
That our broadcast brings us into your home right on Christmas. All of us on the show and the makers of Johnson's Wax products consider it a privilege and an honor to be included in your family circle tonight and to have an opportunity to say Merry Christmas. To those of you who've made a vow to do your shopping earlier next Christmas, we'd like to suggest that there are only 365 days left. And if you hurry, maybe you can get one of those unique and handsome articles like the one just presented to and now being admired by Fibber McGee and Molly.
Imagine old Doc Gamble giving us one of these, Molly. Isn't that the most beautiful present you ever saw?
It certainly is. Gosh. I haven't seen so much chromium since that was what the Silver Service Aunt Sarah sent us in 1937 turned out to be.
Look how solid it's built.
Yes.
There's real construction in this.
Certainly is well made.
You don't pick these things up in bargain basements, kiddo. There was a lot of thought went into buying a thing like this.
I'll bet there was.
Yes, sir.
What is it?
What do you mean? What is it?
I mean, what is it?
Why, it's one of those things that... Why, you use it to... Well, they sort of... I don't know what it is.
Well, weren't there any directions or instructions or anything in the package that came in?
Nope. Came all wrapped up in red tissue paper. Yards and yards of it. My eyes are still a little bloodshot from unwrapping it.
By the way, what did you send Dr. Gamble this year? A book, wasn't it?
Yeah, a book. What to do till the doctor comes. With this thing. I'll be doggone if I know whether to listen to this or cook with it.
I don't know whether to tune it in, turn it on, or toss it out.
Well, we just have to ask Dr. Gamble what it is.
Oh, no. We can't do that. That wouldn't be polite.
And when did you start being polite to Dr. Gamble?
Oh.
You're usually at each other's throats like a couple of necktie salesmen.
Yeah, but my gosh, Molly, when a guy gives you a beautiful gift like this, you hate to admit you haven't got the brains to know what it's for.
Well, I don't hate to admit it. I don't know what it's for.
Well, me either, but I ain't going to give that old sulfur huckster the satisfaction of knowing it. Maybe somebody else will tip us off.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Mr. McGee, Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Alice, and thank you for the handkerchief.
You're welcome, Mrs. McGee, and thank you for the handkerchief.
Not at all, dear.
Well, if you kids are through batting them hankies around, I'd like to ask Alice a question.
Why, certainly, Miss McGee. And if you're going to ask me what I think you're going to ask, the reason Harold and I stood on the porch so long last night when he brought me home was on account of I couldn't find my front door key.
Why, we never locked the front door, Alice. You knew that.
Yes, I knew that, but Harold didn't.
Who's Harold, Alice?
The fat old lady who was the buyer for the corset department at the Bonton's nephew. She's nice, though.
Who is?
Harold Zant.
Oh.
She's the corset department buyer and also substitutes for the manager of household goods when she takes a day off in the basement just to the left of the elevators.
Oh, down there. Look, we got a door slam coming up here any minute. So let's get down to business. You see this thing that Doc Gamble gave us for Christmas?
Creepers, isn't that beautiful? May I use it sometime?
Oh, you certainly may, Alice. Anytime, and we'll watch it.
How do you use it, Alice? I mean, I just wondered if you use it the same way we do.
Oh, I probably do, Mr. McGee. How do you use it?
Now, he asked you first, dear.
Yeah, I just wanted to be sure you knew how to operate it, Alice. I wouldn't want you to get hurt, you know.
Get hurt with one of these things? Oh, Mr. McGee, you say the funniest things. Well, I've got to go now. I have several more presents to take around.
Where are they, Alice? Did you leave them upstairs?
No, I left them right here in the hall.
No, Alice, please.
Not on Christmas night, Alice.
Right here in the hall table drawer.
I thought for a minute there she was going...
The present for Ozzy I put in the hall closet.
McGee, will you please stop worrying about that gift from Dr. Gamble? You sat in that chair for 2 hours just staring at it.
I'm going to sit here till I figure out what it's for, too. Any hunk of chromium-plated aluminum going to make a monkey out of me. I'll figure it out if I... Hey, I'll bet it's a gopher trap.
Why should Dr. Gamble give you a gopher trap? There are no gophers in this part of the country.
Well, what's that got to do with it? He gave me Paris garters last year, and we're 4,000 miles from France.
Well, you've been through France. You've never been through a gopher hole.
Look, let's analyze this thing. Now, here's the handle here on top, see?
How do you know it's the handle?
Well, it stands to reason. It's kind of a loop that just fits the hand.
Well, I've got a gadget out in the kitchen with four of those loops on it, and it's an egg beater.
Okay, but let's just say it's a handle, just for the sake of argument.
All right, it's a handle.
Fine. Now we're getting someplace. All right, just below the handle here, there's a circular disc. That's obviously to protect the hand against something.
Such as what?
Such as I don't know what. Yeah. Then we've got two long, sharp prongs sticking out below it, like daggers. Now then, all we got to do is figure out what a thing like that is for.
Well, we've certainly made tremendous strides, haven't we? You knew that the minute you opened it up.
Now, let me see. If I hold it like this and somebody jogged my arm, I'd have two holes in my leg. Can't be right.
Isn't there anything movable on it, dearie? No working parts?
I haven't been able to find any. However, a few minutes ago, I was turning it this way and that, and all of a sudden, a sharp pain went through me. Kind of a stabbing sensation.
Like electricity or something?
No, like you'd left your manicure scissors here in this chair and I'd sat on them, which you had, and I did.
Well, you were using them last, dearie, cutting stamps off the Christmas card.
No, I wanted them for my stamp collection. Got two from Indiana and one from Florida. Found another good one from Oklahoma, but I had to throw it away on account of I couldn't tell whether it was north or south. Hey, if that's Doc Gamble, stall him a minute. If I can figure out what this gadget is for, I won't have to be humiliated by asking him
it's
what he's...
It's just Mrs. Carstairs, McGee.
Oh, that old tomato surprise. Miss East St. Louis of 1904. She's had her face lifted so many times she has to walk on her toes.
Yeah, but my goodness, she's... Come in.
Our old man Carstairs was nearsighted enough to... Merry Christmas,
Carstairs.
And the same to you, Mr. McGee, and Mrs. McGee.
Thank you, Millicent. Move all those boxes and packages and things off the chair so Mrs. Carstairs can sit down, McGee.
Why, Sean?
Well, Kris Kringle seems to have done very well by you, my dear.
Ah, he did indeed, Mrs. Carstairs. The only thing I wanted that I didn't get was a new waffle iron. Kris crossed me on that.
I done all right, though, Carsty. What do you think of this thing that Doc Gamble gave me?
Yes. I gave my husband one of those for his birthday.
Oh.
They make a splendid gift for men.
Now, what did he do with it, Mrs. Carstairs?
Oh, he still has it, my dear.
Yeah, but what was it for?
For his birthday.
But what is it good for?
Well, I only know what the salesman told me, my dear. And he said it was good for years and years. By the way, Mrs. McGee, thank you so much for the lovely handkerchief.
I'm so glad you like them, Millicent. And thank you for the lovely handkerchief. They're so beautiful. I've been sitting around in drafts trying to catch colds.
Look, Carsty, getting back to this gadget here, just think...
Oh, I almost forgot. Let me show you what my husband gave me for Christmas. Here. Isn't it beautiful?
Ah, oh. For goodness sake. A cornet.
No, my dear. A trumpet. Something I've always wanted.
You mean you can play one of them things, Carsty?
Oh, yes, a little, Mr. McGee.
Well.
Confidentially, I played truant from Wellesley one year and went on the road as trumpet player for Bumpsy Van Jive's original Barrel House Dance Bandit. Oh, such fun, really. And you know what?
No, what, Millicent?
On May 12th, I've been invited to play as guest trumpeter at the Whistful Vista Racetrack.
No kidding. Let's hear you play Boots and Saddles, Carsty.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, you better go easy on that hot finish, though, Carsty. You'll have Busher and Whirlaway coming around the clubhouse turn doing the Lindy Hop.
Oh, I shall have to brush up a bit, of course. I've almost lost my embouchure.
What on earth is an embouchure?
Well, that, my dear, is a French term, meaning an osculation in brass. Well, I must be going.
Hey, wait a minute, Carsty. About this gadget here, what's it for and how do you use it?
Well, that depends, Mr. McGee. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Oh, he's right-handed.
Oh, then of course you use it in your left hand, Mr. McGee, thus leaving the right hand free to work with. Well, Merry Christmas to both of you.
Yeah. At least I know this thing is to be used in the left hand. That's a big help.
Can you imagine her playing the trumpet, McGee? And very well, too, I thought.
Yeah, I can hardly wait for her guest shot at the racetrack. That'll be the first time anybody blew their brains out before a race. Hey, you suppose this thing could be a potato slicer?
I do not. Huh? Anybody who approached a beautiful Idaho potato with a lethal weapon like that would get a nasty note from Governor Williams.
Oh.
Look,
huh?
I have an idea. Let me see it a minute.
Okay, but be careful. Them prongs are sharp. Matter of fact, a gift like this ought to be labeled from Harry to Carrie with love. Harry, why do you want to look at it, Molly?
Look, now, all you have to do is write to the man who made this and ask him what it's for.
Hot dog, is his name on there?
It certainly is, stamped right into the metal.
What is it?
Half pending.
Oh, Molly, that's...
Merry Christmas, Molly. The same to you, Max.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior, you're just the guy I wanted to see.
Yes, Mr. Wilcox, we received a simply wonderful gift.
Oh, you mean that electric iron I sent you? Glad you liked it.
Yeah, but that isn't the thing
I thought it'd be a good gift for you, Molly, considering the time you spend pressing his nib's trousers here. He's the only guy I know who always looks like he'd been smuggling cantaloupes in his pant leg.
Ah, now, Mr. Wilcox.
Look, Junior, when you grow up, you'll realize that clothes ain't so awful important.
No. You ever try walking down 14th Street without any?
Well, he means that you can't judge a man by his clothes, Mr. Wilcox.
Certainly not. The seats of the mighty are often shiny, Junior. Mm. Remember that. Mm-hmm. Better to have bags under the knees than under the eyes. There's many a dull character going around with sharp creases.
Yes, I know.
A wide lapel don't cover up a narrow mind, Junior. And a two-faced fella can look awful good in a single-breasted coat.
Yeah.
A loud check don't make much noise in the First National Bank, too,
well,
either.
So what?
And the horsehair out of some people's shoulder pads would look a lot better on the original horse's neck. Now, you got any more sartorial comments to make?
No, Dad, I'm through.
Well, good. Now maybe we can get down to business. Show Mr. Wilcox what you got for Christmas, dearie.
Here, Junior, this thing. Ever see one of these before?
Seen them. Why, I used to manufacture them.
Huh?
Sure. My brother, Big Sedgwick Wilcox, and I had a little factory together.
Oh, heavenly days. Our troubles are over.
Hot dog. Used to build these things, eh, Junie? Well, sit down, boy. Pass him the cigars, Molly. Have a panatella, fella.
I don't use them, thanks.
Oh.
Of course, when I was manufacturing these gadgets, it was before I ever heard of Johnson's self-polishing blow coat.
Oh, of course, but when you made these things...
Which reminds me, folks, I have a little message.
Well, are we supposed to fall on the floor with loud shouts of amazement, Waxy? You got more messages in your system than Western Union.
Now, don't let him stop you, Mr. Wilcox. Go right ahead.
Okay. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, same to you, son. Go ahead with the message.
That was it. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Now then, what were you saying about this Christmas present?
Well, he wants to know what it's for, and so do I.
I'm sorry, Molly. I promised Doc Gamble I wouldn't tell. He said he was giving you this and for me not to spoil the surprise. Well, jingle bells, kid.
Jingle bells, kid. Why, of all the dirty low-down tricks, he knew and he wouldn't tell.
Maybe it's a puzzle of some kind, McGee.
You can say that again. Hey, do you suppose this thing is a practical joke? You think it's liable to explode or squirt water out or something?
No, I don't. Dr. Gamble doesn't like practical jokes. You know, he told me once that anybody who would give anybody a loaded cigar ought to be made to eat six of them and then have his appendix removed with a blowtorch.
Ah, that sounds just like our kindly old family physician. Halfway up in the next block. That cowtown Kildare thinks the human frame is merely something for him and his buddies to play mumbly peg on. He snoops around among the various organs like a prospect in a Wurlitzer sales room. Besides which, if I...
Come in. Well, for goodness sake, Merry Christmas, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Molly, and same to you. Merry Christmas, McGee.
Well, likewise, Latrivia. Hey, I got a kind of a problem on my hands, Latrivia.
Well, glad to help you, McGee. What seems to be your trouble?
It's this thing I got for Christmas, Latriv. Look.
What's it for?
What's it for, he says.
That's all, brother. Class dismissed. Well, did you have a nice Christmas, Latrivia?
Splendid, thank you. And you?
Just lovely, Your Honor. I gave himself here a nice leather tackle box, and he bought me a new hat.
He bought you a new hat?
You betcha, and a beauty, too, Latrivia, if I do say so myself as I shouldn't. It's right there on the floor, right in front of you there in that box.
Say, that is a beautiful hat.
Hey, don't step on it, Latrivia.
I won't, don't worry. I usually keep an eagle eye about me.
Do you really, Mr. Mayor? That's interesting.
I always carry an elk's tooth myself. But every guy to his own good luck piece, I always say.
You misunderstood me, McGee. When I said I usually keep an eagle's eye about
me,
I...
How do you carry it, Latrivia? On a chain?
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. I just
said
that
it's in a ring. Take your gloves off and let's see it, Mr. Mayor. I've never seen an eagle's eye ring.
I do not have an evil eye. I mean eagle's eye. It isn't a case of having...
Oh, what do we care if it ain't a real eagle's eye, Latrivia? You mustn't be ashamed of a little thing like that.
I am not ashamed of it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. I don't own one.
Oh, it's one you borrowed. Something borrowed, something blue, a good luck piece will keep you true.
Will you both stop this nonsense? Good heavens, I didn't intend
to... It may be nonsense to you, Latrivia, but to thousands of people, a good luck charm means something. Maybe it's an elk's tooth, maybe an old coin, maybe an eagle's eye, but a charm...
I tell you, I have no charm.
Don't be so modest, Your Honor. Why, you have lots of charm.
Sure you have, boy. Don't lose confidence in yourself. Just look people in the eye.
I don't want to look eagles in the eye. People in the charm. I mean to say, if I was an eagle, an eagle's eye is... I merely tried to say that I had an owl's ring, an elk's coin, tooth. And you mistook. You mistook. You understand? It's always a very... Every time I open my mouth, you just... I was saying... I... You... McGee.
Yes?
May I say one thing before I leave?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
What is it, Latrivia, old man?
Simply this, McGee. You have your foot in Molly's hat. Good day.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio.
where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
I see now. It couldn't be a bootjack. Stab yourself in the ankle every time you use it. How about a can opener? Oh, no, it's too simple, miss. Oh, I got it. Hey, Molly.
Yes, dearie?
You know what this is? It's a potato masher. Am I dumb not to have thought of that before?
If that was a masher, dearie, and I was a potato, I'd certainly slap his face.
You don't think it's a potato masher?
To give you a short answer, no.
Oh.
Those two sharp prongs would stab holes in a saucepan and nothing flat.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Well, I wish I could get the answer. As the phonograph needle said to the turntable, this thing is driving me into an early groove.
Well, I can see just one way out, dearie. Call Dr. Gamble and tell him frankly that you don't know what his gift is for.
Oh, I hate to do that. He'd have the laugh on me the rest of my life. Suppose it turned out to be a necktie rack or something simple like that. Wouldn't I look dopey?
Well, my goodness, you can't sit in that chair the rest of your days glaring at it. Why don't you do that?
Come in.
Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble. Merry Christmas.
Same to you, my dear. And even to you, Marblehead.
Thank you, Aerosmith. It's always nice to see you in our little home.
Thank you.
Because while you're in our little home, we know you're not torturing some helpless patient.
Stop it now, McGee. Why don't you two boys ever say anything nice about each other?
That's a good idea, Molly. You first, McGee. Say something nice about me.
My gosh, I can't think of anything.
Neither can I. Oh, well, have a nice Christmas, folks.
Oh, just grand, Doctor. We got so many nice things.
And some interesting things, too, Doc.
Yes?
Some of our friends really use their ingenuity. Hmm. Now, you take... I'll get it.
79 Whistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Yes, he's right here. For you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Just tell him to put a mustard plaster on it, and if the pains start coming too close together, they're smoking too much.
I see.
Hello, Gamble speaking. Who? Oh, yes, Mrs. Harlan. He won't. Well, tie his legs together and try again. I'll be there as soon as I can. Goodbye.
Nurse?
Housekeeper. Can't get our turkey in the oven.
Well, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the interesting things people send people for Christmas.
Such as what, McGee?
Well, now, for instance, that wonderful gift you sent McGee, Doctor.
This, Doc.
Oh, yeah. You like it?
Oh, do we like it? We love it, Doctor. McGee just tickled to death with it.
Don't know how I ever got along without one, Doc.
Well, that's great, my boy.
Yeah?
You had me sort of stymied there for a while, and then I thought of this. I said to myself, aha, I said, that's just the thing for McGee.
The thing I like about it is there's no complicated machinery to it.
No, it's extremely simple.
It sure is. Was there any directions come with it, Doc?
Directions? For a simple little thing like that?
Don't be silly, dear. You certainly don't need instructions for a gadget like that. Why, there isn't a moving part on it.
I was just kidding. My gosh, a child could manage this.
I certainly.
I wonder where I could borrow a child. Hey, Doc.
Yeah?
I just wondered if, well, when you use this, it's...
Well, what he means, Doctor, is this. You know, he thinks so much of your gift, he doesn't want to damage it by using it wrong. How do you use it?
Well, great Scott, how does anybody use it?
Well, that's a good question.
But I give up. Look, Doc,
yes.
While I really appreciate this gift...
And we've always wanted one.
There's one little thing I want to know.
What's that, my boy?
What in Sam Hill is it for?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, then why did you give it to me?
Because you gave it to me last Christmas, Picklefoot.
If you really want to solve the mystery of that gadget, why don't you call the people you bought it from?
They wouldn't know.
Why wouldn't they?
I just happened to think. I won that thing on a punch board. It cost me 70 cents.
Oh, dear. Well, let's forget the whole thing. What do you say?
I say this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very, very special Christmas. The first peacetime Christmas in 5 years. For millions of war victims all over the world, it isn't a very merry one, which makes us doubly appreciative of our own blessings.
Among which we count the friendship of all of you who have been so loyal to us these many years.
Merry Christmas to you.
And good night, all.
From Christmas Day of 1943, there's Fibber McGee and Molly. Well, we're out of time on this edition of Yesteryear, but back with you again next week at this time for more from the golden age of radio. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat listening night.